right, everybody, the ideas that we have used in the last two class periods on the first part of this page, remember these three terms go in all in those blanks that are on that page, and come down to number five on the bottom now, a passage that really I need for us to get to last week, and we'll have to try to move through things fairly quickly today, but I'd like to try to gather up now what we've learned from the Old Testament and from the ministry of Christ and from the priesthood of Christ that he exercises over the house of God, according to Hebrews 3, as he functions as the great high priest. Look at Hebrews 10. Verses 19 through 25, and I think most of you are aware, this is the turning point passage, the key passage in the whole book of Hebrews. It applies everything that's gone before it, and it's the foundation for everything that comes after it, and it has a special relevance to what we've been thinking of with regard to the concept of worship. So look at it first, and let's read it, and I'm asking here, I worded it wrong as I typed it. How is the church expected to respond to Christ as its high priest? That's what that should say. So ask the question, how do we, knowing what we have learned so far, that he has entered the Holy of Holies, he's offered one sacrifice for sins forever, now he ever lives, is a high priest who knows God, but who also can be touched with the feeling of our infirmities and so forth. What do we do with these realities, these privileges? Let's read verses 19 through 25. And Becky, thank you for volunteering to read for us.
Since therefore, brethren, we have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which he inaugurated for us through the veil, that is, his flesh. And since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near.
All right, now, looking at that passage, and it's using the Old Testament concepts as the basis for thinking, and without necessarily trying to develop every idea that's here, how would you summarize? You notice that we have a great priest over God's house, that we may enter the holy place through his holy places through his flesh, and so forth. So, what do we do with that privilege? How do we respond? I'll give you a hint. Focus on the three "let us" statements here. In this passage, what does the writer want us to do with these realities that he's mentioned?
Draw near with a sincere heart.
All right. He says first, draw near. And if you've been reading with us, and some of you haven't gotten to be here with us each time, of course, but this is the language of worship in the Old Testament. The idea of drawing near is to approach God's presence, to offer gifts and sacrifices and so forth. And what is the unique blessing about this that you notice in verse 22, especially in light of what we've read already about this? Who could draw near to God under the Old Testament system? All right, the high priest. And the other priest could come, remember, to the first part of the tabernacle to offer gifts and sacrifices. They had to do so with, I'm not sure that with boldness or confidence would be the right word to say it. They had to do so with great care and so forth. Here it is, the us is whom? Well, look at verse 19. Who's he addressing? Verse 19.
The church, right?
All
right,
brother, all brothers, all, and of course, brothers and sisters in this sense, all the church can draw near to God. The whole house of God can draw near to Him with a clean conscience, with purity in our lives, with full assurance of faith. So to draw near with assurance is the idea here that stands out to me. Do you you notice that thought too, or would you summarize the first "let us" in a different way than that? Anybody? That's the Lord wants us to draw near to His presence through His Son, through our great High Priest, with assurance. What else do you notice? What's the second one? All right, let us hold fast what? All right, where's my... All right, we want then to hold fast the confession of our hope. Now, does the first hold fast have any relation to the second? Does the first "let us" have any connection to the second "let us"? Is the second "let us" going to happen without the first one? Okay, the idea is that our drawing near to God's presence to do service to Him has a big bearing on our holding fast the confession of our hope. We remain strong, we remain committed, we stay with our service to the Lord, partly by being with each other and engaging in the drawing near full assurance together. All right, what about the third? And notice verse 23 also focuses on He who promised is what? Faithful. So this holding fast is through the renewing of our confidence in God's promise. The drawing near was through our confidence in the cleansing power of Christ's sacrifice. So those two things. Now what's the third "let us"? Alright, it is that we consider one another, especially in what way?
Assembly.
Alright, we consider one another in assembling together. I'll just put it this way. The idea is that somehow there is a situation envisioned in which with our great High Priest, we are a part of our lives. The journey of our lives involves our drawing near with God, to God, and then with ourselves personally, our holding fast of our hope, and then with each other. Our considering each other. Now, it's never a view here of our going to the assembly to see what they will do for me. It is an idea pictured here in which we assemble in part out of consideration for what our influence will do for each other. What our presence will do for each other. What our involvement will do for each other. Does everybody note that idea? The thought is that there are times in life when we might not be able to hold fast were it not for our support of and our involvement in each other's lives and our our realization that other people are depending on me and that type of thing. You get the concept of both of tabernacle, priesthood, and sacrifice here, because priesthood, I told you that the word priest is never used in the New Testament of Christians in a singular sense. It's always the plural idea. And in this way, there's something about the church being together that's crucial with this. All right, look over at chapter 13, verses 15 and 16. Same question. How's the church expected to respond to Christ as its high priest? And look at these two verses. We could have started at verse 13 in our reading here, involved the same thing. This whole picture is one of Christ's sacrifice as the high priest and of a people purchased through him. But look at 15 and 16. Michelle, read for us, do you mind? Verse 15 and 16.
Therefore, by him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased.
All right, now notice here, we have made the point that the spiritual sacrifices are offered by this priesthood, and especially the idea of our being a spiritual house to do this. But notice in this reading, there are two senses in which these sacrifices, these spiritual sacrifices, are going to be they're going to involve two different senses. What about verse 15? Notice the let us idea again. What kind of a sacrifice is pictured in verse 15? All right, it is a sacrifice of praise to God. And what does the concept of praise mean? What is praise? There is a form it takes here. There is a form it takes that we'll notice in a minute. But just for now, the idea of praise. What were you going to say? All right, that's a good, and expand a little, and what he has done. But praise, sometimes we use praise as a term for a certain type of a song. But praise is actually just the telling of what, or proclaiming of what God has done and of who he is. In this passage now, what form does praise to God take? Verse 15.
It's a verbal thing.
All right, it is a verbal thing, and especially it is the fruit of lips that acknowledge his name. Now, what form does praise, which is fruit of the lips, normally take?
Singing.
All right, so singing here. Now, the idea that this priesthood assembles, and with assurance and hope and consideration for each other, offers in its service a sacrifice of praise which consists of the fruit of our lips that acknowledge his name, is a wonderful picture, maybe the very best picture in the New Testament, of the church serving God together. We have a special service planned tonight. The songs we all need most. I hope you'll plan to be with us. But I want to remind us tonight that what stands out about the New Testament church, what's really different about the New Testament church is singing, is that it's offered by all of its members. And notice in this passage, if I were looking for one passage that that I think offers the best explanation for why the New Testament church just sings, it would be this one. Praise is a sacrifice which involves what here?
Fruit of our lips.
Why is that? Because it has to express an understandable message. Fruit of the lips that acknowledge His name. Now, on the other hand, look at verse 16. What kind of spiritual sacrifice is envisioned in verse 16?
I find it interesting that it says we're to do this work as a sacrifice.
Yes, yeah, it is. A sacrifice that's offered to God, or a spiritual sacrifice. What kind of work is it? Verse 16.
Benevolence.
All right, it is to the sacrifice of doing good to other people. Now, this one may involve doing good and sharing. It may involve at least in part, the giving that goes on when we are assembled together, or even the kindness and encouragement that is offered when we are assembled together. But it also will involve the kind of effort to serve people that may go on outside the assembly as well. The church doesn't cease to be a priesthood when it's not meeting. It still is a priesthood. And in Romans 12, for example, verses 1 and 2, where Paul appeals to us on the basis of God's mercies to present what? Our own bodies, our entire selves, as living sacrifices. So we are the priesthood. We offer ourselves as living sacrifices. And Paul further explains that this is our reasonable service, or our spiritual worship, depending on how it ends up getting translated. So the idea that would suggest, I think, that spiritual sacrifices are offered in doing good and sharing in a broader context even than that. Now, the idea is this: the drawing near to God with full assurance, relationship with God, holding fast the confession of our hope, our faithfulness with ourselves, with our own confession, and then the consideration of each other in assembly sets a tone for the entire Christian life in which God gets praised and people get helped. People, and we're not just talking about materially here, but people get blessed as God would. All right, now we have to go really fast with the rest of this. I'm sorry to say that. That concept is important. Now, I want to take a little bit of a turn now at this point. Back to something that would say, all right, now we've traced this idea from the Old Testament through the ministry of Christ in the experience of the church. So, looking back now, what about the sacredness of all of this? The sacredness of things involving the tabernacle, priesthood, sacrifice, paradigm has always been upheld. And consider these two examples from the Old Testament. I'd like to just read them, and we want to draw one broad conclusion from them. In Leviticus 10, verses 1 through 3, the famous famous event. 1 Samuel 13, verses 8 through 14, not quite as famous, but teaching the same thing, I believe. Who has the Leviticus 10 passage found for us? This is Nadab and Abihu, the two sons of Aaron. Aaron has received the high priesthood. His sons have received priesthood privilege.
God has set forth the means by which His people may know He's in their presence and may draw near to Him. It involved the guidelines that God set forth about how and under what circumstances this was to be done. And now these two, here's the experience of these two sons. Barney, would you mind to read the first three verses?
Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people I must be glorified." Okay. So Aaron held his peace.
All right, now, you bear that in mind. They offer, I noticed that a lot of the newer versions translate what that says as strange fire as unauthorized fire. That idea. In other words, the fire was supposed to come from the altar where the offerings were presented, and the drawing near to God was supposed to, in that way, be shown to depend upon the sacrifice that God had provided to allow sinful man to be cleansed and to draw near to Him. Unauthorized fire was to ignore the necessity of cleansing before approaching the holy God. All right, now, in 1 Samuel 13, remember that the priests were to come from the tribe of Levi, from Aaron's family, and the king was to come from the tribe of Judah. Now, in this case, Saul, who is the king, takes it upon himself to do the sacrificing, which the priest should have done. And look at what happens here. 1 Samuel 13, verses 8 through 14. Someone have that one located.
Then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel.
The he is Saul. Saul thinks he's waited long enough here. Go ahead, Barney.
But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, "Bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me." And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might greet him. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Mishmash, then I said, 'The Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord.' Therefore I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which He commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for Himself a man after His own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over His people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you."
All right. Now, I realize we're dealing with the Old Testament law, and we've tried to emphasize when we were doing that all along. Notice what Saul does is he believes that he has good reason for what he does, but his reasoning involves the idea that worship is a means to an end that you use for certain purposes. And in that way, he justifies what he's doing. Now, what, if anything, should we learn from these two episodes?
There's a true worship and a false worship.
All right, that's involved, I think. That's involved. I kind of see a.
God gives us guidelines on what we're supposed to do, and we can't just make up what we want
okay.
to do.
I think both of you are dealing with applications of a principle. A principle that's here is that holiness has to be respected. That's the reason for what Fred and Debbie have both said. But the principle is holiness is not to be taken lightly, and it's not to be disrespected. And that idea seems to me to be illustrated here. Now, if those things were true of the shadow, then what of the real thing? What of the true tabernacle and the holy priesthood and so forth? Then full assurance and hope and God's promises and considering each other will be, well, look at Hebrews 12 in verses 28 and 29. I think we'll get to where you'll see kind of where we're headed with this. There is a certain kind of attitude toward the privileges that we're talking about that is important. And I think that Hebrews 12 may be a gospel application of the same principle that's in the previous two passages, and that is that holiness is to be respected. Hebrews 12, verses 28 and 29. Let me read these two. And I'm reading from the English Standard Version here. Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And thus, let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Now, please notice in what I just read the combination of gratitude. Let me write these three terms down and think about them. These are from Hebrews 12, 28, 29. There is the combination of gratitude, desire to please God. This is in the term acceptable. Let us offer to God acceptable worship. Acceptable to whom? God. And by the way, in the New Testament, the term that's usually translated acceptable and the one that's usually translated to please are the same word in many cases. And then the third element in this combination is reverence for Him, reverence for God. All right, to complete the three-point sermon that's here, there you go. The idea of gratitude to God, desire to please God, and reverence for God, and these things are put together in combination form. And then think of what worship expresses to Him. This sacrifice of praise that remembers gratefully what God has done, and where the desire to please Him gets developed and respect for Him gets deepened, and then it turns toward life among people. And there is the intention for God's name to be honored through activity that shows His mercy toward people through His people. And that arrangement, the wisdom and the power of God, gets done. And we still got only half of this lesson. I hope this is not wearing us out, but the concept of worship, friends, is important. It's amazing how much division has occurred over these some of the activities, and possibly some of that has occurred because we haven't dug in enough to this part of it. And I'm hoping that helps us today. Let's remember today the privilege of drawing near to God with assurance. Let this day be important, and holding fast your confession of hope, and then let's try to
consider each other, to urge each other on in love and good works today. Appreciate your being here with us. Everybody enjoy this pretty week. Hope it's a pretty week.